Roadshow, episode number 303. My name is John Morgan. Cole Coffee is not with me, but back under great demand, of course. The people have said we must have. It's hot tea. Making the journey to Fight Island once again.
And we can't say award nominated anymore because the awards have happened. And that's why I'm glad you had me on this platform today, John. We need to stop the steal, guys, okay?
Oh,
we need to get that. I demand a recount. Let's count these votes again. I won. Recount them.
You know what? Listen.
By a lot.
As far as I'm concerned, you were still from the World MMA Award nominated, the Mac Life. I mean, yes, it's an award that already happened.
Yep.
It's an award that neither one of us took home. We both left losers that night, empty-handed.
Runners up.
I think we were tied for second place. I didn't see the exact results, but I'm pretty sure we were tied for second place.
Yeah.
It was good to have you. We are here in Fight Island. It's our third trip to Fight Island. It's a little bit different. I want to say, first of all, I feel really bad for the newbies that are here for the first time. The young Mike Bond is one of them. He's over grinding in his room right now. That sounds terrible. He's working really hard right now.
And also grinding.
But, you know, there's some UFC staff and some other people. Yeah. I mean, fighters, of course, and corners. But, you know, they've been promised this, Instagram vacation where you can go down to the beach and everybody goes to the cage. I don't even know if the cage is still down on the beach right now. We can't get to it anymore.
Yeah.
It's a little bit different experience now, right? Look, not going to complain. We're here for work, right? So at the end of the day, we can do, we got our work, but we got less restaurants available. We got less.
Less specials, John.
Well, sir, I was building to that part. I was getting to the part that seemed like it was big, right? No access to the beach.
Right.
No access to the F1 track.
Awful.
All of the entertainment things that we were doing. That is bad. But, man, they hit the heart, man. They hit the heart. Stills. We're not in the office right now. We are in the Crown Plaza. I mean, that is the host hotel once again. It's a wonderful hotel. In fact, we are in my room right now.
Yeah.
It's an amazing room.
Lovely.
I might have the best room in the hotel. If not, you might have the best room in the hotel. They have taken care of us.
Can't complain.
Cannot complain. However,
I will complain.
People that listen to the MMA Roadshow know that when we're in Fight Island, we're coming to you from Stills.
Yeah.
That's the office. But they have done away with the drink specials. And now, no matter what time of day you go there, it is a $12 beer. And, sir, the MMA junkie budget, the USA Today budget, the Gannett budget, the John Morgan budget?
Yeah.
I can't swing that.
Well, man, a lot was made out of the Fight Island experience being a thing for Abu Dhabi about promoting tourism. And I would argue that no one's promoted Stills more than we have. And if anyone's coming for a Fight Island experience and has listened to this show, I defy anyone to say they weren't going to go to Stills.
In the history of Stills, they've never gotten that much love.
Free advertisement every single week.
Probably never served that much beer either.
Well, and listen, we can't be sure why they stopped the specials. A UFC security guy did say maybe some people had been selfish and misbehaved before.
I can't speculate as to who that might be. That could be anybody.
Certainly could be.
It could be anybody.
It could be the guy who
could be John Morgan
in
hot tea.
Yeah.
Could be Oscar Willis.
Listen,
we'll never know.
Sometimes people get loud.
All right, so let's talk about it. One of the things we like to talk about the fights. We like to but everybody does that. That was the whole basis of the roadshow that's been largely taken away from us in 2020 is the fact that we travel and we get out there. And we, exactly. That's it. We tell you what it's all about. So let's just say it's way different this time. I want to be clear, though. No less commitment to safety. I don't feel like they're half-assing anything. I don't feel like the things are being done differently. I mean, probably the transition between zones. So basically, we used to have one big safe zone. Mm-hmm. I mean, there was literally physical barriers where people could not drive into the safe zone. And the whole thing started with tests back home and then the charter flight. And all that still exists. But when we get here now, basically you've got they call it safe areas now. You've got the Crown Plaza.
Mm-hmm.
You've got the W Hotel where the athletes and the UFC staff are. And then you have Etihad Arena. And then between those, there's no more walking, so you can't just get out there in foot traffic. You have to take shuttles. I do feel like there's still a commitment to safety. I don't feel like, oh, my gosh, this is dangerous, or, oh, my gosh, they're not paying attention anymore. But it's just a lot different now, right? I mean, in between those zones, there's just, cars and stuff out on the street.
Yeah, and in a way, I actually think they're paying attention to safety more because because it feels a little bit more open. For example, I feel before, if you sort of approached the barriers, they would look at you. But I feel like if you crossed out of the hotel into like the real world, which is like 7 feet away from the door,
right,
you wouldn't be back in.
No.
Like, at all.
You're right. You know, that is one thing that is now, because it's not a whole zone, it's just the buildings. You notice they have security at the door,
exactly,
that's watching in and out and who's getting in. Yeah, they're definitely paying attention to what's going on.
Yeah, so I think they're actually a little bit more strict. And I've heard, you know, so in the media room, a lot of reminders to keep wearing the masks,
right,
and stuff like that. Little things. Today we went to the Etihad Arena. I'm sure we'll talk about it. But, yeah, you know, a reminder, sanitize your hands and stuff like that. So I think the safety thing, it seems as much, if not more than ever.
Yeah.
Which is ironic because the bubble is so tight. But, yeah, I feel more safe, I suppose.
It's weird. I just want to make that clear, because even though everything is shrinking and everything's a little bit different, I just want to make sure that people understand. It's not as if, you know, the UAE is just decided, like, don't worry about it, it's fine.
No, they're not negating their duties. I don't know how much is that the UAE or how much is the UFC.
True.
Or a combination of both, but they're not slacking.
No, not at all. Now, you touched on it, so let's just get into it. We did get a brief sneak preview of Etihad Arena today.
And half of it.
And I will say, yeah, exactly. Very, very brief. You know, and it's funny because I feel like the first time we came here as Fight Island, we were talking about the possibility of,
yeah,
Etihad, right? And then it was the second time maybe it would be Etihad, and now it's finally the third time. And even that, you know, wasn't necessarily certain until about a week ago or what have you. So this arena has been built. It's been under construction for a while. And I guess I just want to say, I mean, if we're being fair, now listen, we were in there a very, very brief period of time today, but if you're just being honest, it's not done yet. I mean,
no.
The places that you will see on television, the bowl, the walkouts, I mean, that stuff's done. Like, it's going to be a nice arena. Like, it looks really, I mean, the part inside is cool, but if we're just being honest, it's not a complete arena yet.
Yeah, in fact, when you saw it today, the very idea they were having it ready for the last one is laughable. In my opinion, it's probably 50% complete,
right,
because, like you said, the bowl, the arena itself seems well on construction, but, I mean, you know, there's about 100 people in there with hard hats and high vises on still working.
Yep.
I mean, we're talking about a very, like you said, what you see on TV.
It's going to look nice.
In fact, I think it will be a very nice arena once completed. It looks very.
They've got luxury suites in there. They're building the concourses out. They're doing all that.
I don't think there's going to be a bad seat in the house. It looks like very nice,
yeah,
sort of sloped seating, so you can have a good view and stuff like that. It's shaped like an amphitheater as well, so it's like a U around the pitch, whatever,
right,
the fuck's going to be in there.
It is kind of cool, though, that we've got this, I mean, permanent structure, right, to know. Because, I mean, as Dana White continues to say, like, look, Abu Dhabi's playing in our plans for a while, you know, whether it's Fight Island or...
When you saw it today, John, it is fucking ridiculous. They thought, like, last time Khabib was going to be in there.
That was what makes me wonder, because, again, TV, it's going to look fantastic. And we know now, 2,000 fans, we could see, by the way, that, you know, plexiglass was being installed to keep fans. So there's going to be some kind of physical barrier. I still don't know if there's going to be fans on the floor or not. I mean, I'm not sure.
I think there are going to be people on the floor, but not necessarily fans who are able to purchase a ticket.
Yes, yes, yes. Those will be the VIPs that were also in the Flash Forum last time.
From what I can gather, it's going to be an assembly of people on the floor.
It's going to be a nice arena, but if we're being 100% honest, it's not completely done yet. It's going to get there, but I will say this. I don't think the broadcast are going to be able to tell any of that at all, because, you know, the part that you can see on TV is going to be nice.
The plexiglass thing is interesting, though, right? Is that going to stifle the sound?
That's what I'm curious about as well, too. And that's why I wonder if there's going to be people on the floor. So as we walked in there today, and again, it was just in through. It's a construction zone, right? We were wearing hard hats. We were wearing the high-vis vests, like you said. And we were basically told, don't stop moving.
Yes.
Keep going. Do not stop and take pictures. Do not stop and take video. You know, a couple people snuck in a little social media shot here and there. But we didn't get a chance to really study and inspect it. But it did seem like, you know, you got the lower bowl. And then there's plexiglass that it kind of reminded me of a hockey rink, right? Where there's but instead of being like the boards and then the glass, it was literally just plexiglass that was probably, I don't know, 6 feet, 7 feet tall, something like that. I mean, that's why I wondered if there was going to be people on the floor, because that's clearly blocking those people there. But like you said, what kind of sound?
The more we talk about it, I suspect that people listening to it, you probably won't get a shot of the fans, because if you know Dana and he's running the production,
keep it nice and dark.
I think he, because also not just plexiglass, when we were walking up by the seats, I could see like a green tick for where you could sit.
Right.
And then there's like four or five seats until the next one. You know, very, very
yeah, they were like marking the floor. I could see that too. It was like, yeah,
very, very socially distant. So I think on TV, it's going to look, if Dana's like concern is I don't want a half filled arena, it's going to look like a very sparse crowd.
Right.
And I think on TV, it actually probably won't look that nice. And I think if Dana's worried about the optics and the spectacle, he probably might want to steer clear of that. And I don't see it.
Kind of interesting about that. That is such an interesting dynamic. And I think it's important to notice, because I saw a lot of people going, oh, Dana had to go back on what he said.
I saw that too.
That
was weird.
It's key to remember, he always said from the beginning, and maybe it's just one of those things that it wasn't a big news item, but we just heard him talk on. He always said, I will allow them to do anything they want. They have been a great partner to me. They can do whatever they want. So I don't know. I just, you know, not that I'm defending anything. Like, I'm not, but I saw people going like, oh, the UFC had to cave on this one. They were always pretty clear. We're going to let Abu Dhabi do whatever they want to do. I'm interested to see how it comes out. You know, I mean, I'm interested to see how it's done. And, I mean, look, we've seen the safety protocol that's in place. It seems like that's going to be extensive as well. You know, you got to have the rapid test in place. There's all these things. I mean, they've got a ton of rules. It's not like you can just buy a ticket and walk in.
You have to have a test taken within 48 hours.
Right.
And if you don't show your result on the night of, you don't get a refund. They just tell you to fuck off.
That's crazy, right? Yeah. I mean, it's not their fault, but it is what. Can you imagine, like, if you just, for whatever reason, you just weren't informed.
You bought a package deal.
That's what I'm saying. You just weren't informed and you didn't know. And you're like, dude, I'm going. Like, you know, and then you show up and they're like, sorry, bro, you're out. Yeah. Like, oh.
And it's not like, so I heard that they, originally in the package deal, testing was included.
Right.
And then they're like, ah, fuck them.
You got a great job.
We might be able to get a few refunds out, like maybe get a few new seats. But.
Well, let's be honest. I think most of the people that have purchased tickets is probably not going to be too bothered by the.
The funny thing is, you know, I know a few people who got tickets from Ireland and the UK.
Really?
I know a few people, yeah. They were not that expensive.
Wow.
The most expensive ticket was a diamond ticket, which is good marketing for Dustin. But I think it was, like only $1,500, like, dollars,
which that's definitely not a lot. That's
not that expensive for a McGregor fight.
Not for a Conor McGregor.
Like, if that was in Madison Square Garden, you're looking 5 G's for a decent seat.
Even T-Mobile these days is probably 2,500.
And we're talking like you're one of 2,000 as well. That's a unique experience they could charge, especially for the people in this region.
Yeah,
they could bump up that, and they kept it low. In fact, maybe that's part of Dana's thing where he's like, look, fuck it, we'll have 2,000 fans, but like, just get real fans.
Get some real people in here.
No.
It's interesting. All right. We'll get into all that in a second. We'll talk about the card itself. I did want to ask a little bit about you, right? Because it's funny. Here we are. We're already talking about Conor McGregor, right? And how can you not? I mean, you come into this 3-fight series, and there's no question that we're looking ahead to Conor McGregor. But what I guess I wanted to ask from your point of view is, I mean, again, there's no question that that's the marquee matchup. That's the marquee name. He's the biggest name in the history of sport. But, man, for you right now, what's the energy like for you? Because here's what I wonder. Right now, everybody's focused on 250. So the thing about 250, you still have a lot of work to do on the ground in terms of UFC on ABC1, in terms of UFC on ESPN 20. But I know you've got to be excited too, right? I mean, this is – of course, everybody gets excited about a Conor McGregor fight, but this is – let's just say it's your boss. I mean, so that it's you know, there's a little bit more tie-in or whatever. So I mean, are you able to push that off to the back a little bit and think about these other two cards, or are you like all 257 right now? as the lid of proper 12 is popped off there.
Well, that's just describing my energy right off. Oh, that was a big pull. Yeah, look, man, I can't deny my priorities, and it's not just like it's what's expected of me in my role here. It's like, you know. If Paul Felder's in front of me, he's going to get asked about fucking Conor McGregor,
right?
Because that's the sort of stuff that my site would like me to,
of course,
to report on. For the listeners, John is being a very professional man, not commenting on perhaps my stress levels throughout the day today, which I appreciate, and we won't go into too
much. Well, I will say, yeah, you had to leave. Our Wi-Fi is not the greatest here.
No.
Of course, you were getting an exclusive interview with Conor McGregor, and you had to go to another hotel to do that. Then you've got to turn that whole thing around while we've got other activities going on. And it look.
Yeah, trying to do it on the bus as we're like clinging to the last second of Wi-Fi. And I'm like, hit publish. But
I did notice the stress level as you were trying to get things done today. So I just wondered. I mean,
a lot of pacing. Yeah. And so I appreciate that, and I appreciate not necessarily going into detail as to how bad it was. But yeah, it's a Conor McGregor card for me comes with a lot of pros and a lot of cons. I'll go back to the This one's a bit weird because of COVID and all that sort of stuff. But I'll go back to the Cerrone fight last year in January.
Right.
I got an exclusive with Dana White one-on-one, first time ever. I got an exclusive with Kavanaugh, first time ever. Roddy, first time ever. Connor, first time ever. And then Tyson Fury randomly.
Wow. That's crazy. I don't remember that.
Yeah. That was a good week for me.
Yeah.
You know,
not bad.
So to get that
good career for some people.
No, not too bad. So to get that sort of access is obviously immensely satisfying, rewarding. You're talking, and you know, if we're being candid, like as a young person, well, as a person trying to get into this career and make something of themselves, it's a great opportunity to get yourself out there. So that's the massive pluses of it. The negatives of it are like you're dealing with a fucking like. The stakes are very high.
Yeah. Biggest star in the sport.
You know, and maybe for people like Ariel, I'm sure Ariel probably feels it too and stuff like that, who's been doing this for so long yourself. But Ariel and Connor like would do an interview probably every time.
Right.
And maybe Ariel feels a bit more confident in his stuff. Me and Connor have only started doing interviews together. And there's always a feeling for me that if I fuck this up and I don't get my website this interview, like that's so bad. And so the stakes always feel like so. I mean, you probably even saw me today. John was like working the room while I was waiting for this interview. I'm just sitting there in silence, just staring at the laptop screen, like any minute now.
Yeah, and I never thought about that. Like, I mean, obviously, a Conor McGregor interview is a big interview for anybody, right? I mean, it's a big interview for any website, any outlet, anything, whatever. But at MMA Junkie, if the Conor, you know, interview doesn't go great, yeah, we've got about 20 other interviews we got to bang out that day. We'll try to make it up somewhere else. But yeah, for the Mag Life, the Mag Life interview with Conor McGregor needs to go good.
Well, it needs to happen at all.
Yeah,
it needs to happen at all. And you just know, if you fuck it up, you know,
make a tech issue.
Mate,
Wi-Fi doesn't connect.
Stop.
Okay, yeah, I'm not even going to
No, it's like the fucking first time I recorded an interview with Zoom and the whole time, like, while he's talking on screen, I just kept moving the mouse to see the little thing was still recording. I was just, So, yeah, the pressure comes from that too. And then I learned quite early on in the sport, and we've spoken about this on the show before, about it's quite hard to remain unbiased,
sure,
to a certain degree, and a lot of people who are on the outside looking in think that it is. And I can just tell you that if you have the opportunity to talk to a dude who's interesting and talk to a dude who doesn't speak English and is really, really dull, eventually you're going to want to see the guy who's really interesting win, because it does more for you, and,
right,
and so on and so forth. I mean,
so when your entire website is
amplify that by about fucking 8,000.
Yeah.
You know, fight nights are not so. Like the Khabib fight night, the Cerrone fight night.
Tense.
Yeah. Don't think I can speak English by the time he's walking through the cage. I think it's mostly just cussing and.
Well, that confirmed a lot of what I assumed was what goes through your head, and it's crazy, right? Because normally,
I will say this as well, just quickly. I will say it's not that like I'd be lying if I didn't say I want him to win.
Sure.
Like something, but
of course.
It's not like I need him to win, like, oh my God, he's got to win. But there's an element of like, please just nothing like fucked up happen or embarrassing happen. Like, let's just this. I think this, and to, I'll give myself some credit, the site is at a point now where I don't think it lives and dies on his winning or losing.
Right.
You know, I think we're quite a successful website. We passed 1 million subscribers on YouTube today.
Congrats.
Thank you very much. Now give me that fucking award. you know, I don't think we live and die on that, but I think, you know, he's very important, and it's not just us. His success lifts everyone's interest in the sport and stuff like that. So just it's that
everybody's,
yeah,
literally everybody's.
Yeah, everyone's traffic goes up.
Yep.
Just that, but times it by 10.
Yeah. That's intense, man. And it's different too, because this is so unique in the fact that, you know, we're doing these bunched up cards, right? And I mean, normally, not that Conor's not the spotlight here. He is. There's no question about it. And listen, by the way, we're talking a lot about Conor McGregor. I'm not trying to take away from Dustin Poirier or anything like that, but let's be honest. I mean, Conor's the big star, and of course, he worked for the Mac Live, so it just makes sense. I mean, I'm excited.
I love Dustin.
Dustin. Saw him jogging today, didn't we?
Did
he was out there on the street. Oh yeah, did you not
see him?
Yeah, it was as we were coming back from Etihad Arena. He was out there already doing a little run with Mikey Brown, getting a little work in. So it was good to see him out there today. Look forward to talking to him. But yeah, it's interesting because. So here's what I'm interested about, the way they set this thing up, right? Of course it makes sense. So you've got this, you know, three events in 8 days. It starts out on ABC. Network television. Amazing, right? I mean, and you know it's going to be a six-hour commercial for the pay-per-view, right? I mean, you're going to see so many promos.
Here's Max Holloway, who was beaten by Conor McGregor.
It's going to be, you know, so that's great. So you start out on network television. Then you go on the Wednesday to ESPN, right? I mean, not network television, but one of the biggest cable networks there is, of course, the premier sports destination, blah, blah, all leading into the $69.99 pay-per-view where they would like you to sign up for. So it's like you have this extended promotional period. But it's weird, too, because we don't have the full week built around the fight, right? On Wednesday night, we've got a lot of work to do. So I don't know. On the one hand, I understand the heck out of it, especially from a promotional standpoint. I think from us as an operational standpoint, it's weird. Like, we're not going to get to – I feel like the website is going to be, like, almost distracted from the big star. And that's – so it's a little bit weird.
Yeah, well, do you know how many times we've – you know, as people who work in this or as fans, we've said, oh, that card, you know, it doesn't feel like there's a lot of build for that card. And then you'll always say, well, they're going to start building after this weekend,
right?
You know, because then it's the next card. And you think, oh, okay, well, what? So you're going to start building for a Conor fight on Thursday.
Exactly. Yeah,
after the next one. So I do feel, it made, no disrespect to Neil Magny or Michael Chiesa.
No.
I think it might have made sense when Hamzat and Leon were fighting because that was a big fucking fight.
Sure.
So I think that was like the nice little pop on the way,
right? The new star.
Yeah, I think that would have been really tasty, and you know, Hamzat would have said something about Conor. You know, it would have been kind of a part and parcel of it.
Yeah,
I think a little bit of that's been lost. I wonder if maybe the Wednesday card's a bit of a burden now, rather than because it was built around that fight.
And I love those two guys, so it's not a personal.
Yeah, yeah, no, dude.
In the ramp up to a Conor McGregor pay per view, in the ramp up to one of the biggest events of the year, it seems weird to have a Wednesday card.
I will say, and I'm sure it'd be ridiculous to assume otherwise, it's partly design. They do manage to wrangle about as many storylines attached to McGregor as they can when he's fighting. So you got Holloway, you know, you got Poirier, you got Hamzat, who's been having a bit of beef.
Yeah.
Khabib happens to be in town. You know, it's just
how that works out.
It's just always like little.
What a bunch of coincidences.
Yeah.
That's funny. All right, well, listen, before we get into the card this week, we will talk about UFC on ABC1, which I think is pretty cool. But you mentioned, you know, last year around this time, getting your first one-on-one with Dana White. Well, you got another one this week. We'll talk about yours, but I don't have the rights to yours. So we'll play the conversation that I had. You and I both, it was fun, actually. You and I, we thought we were in kind of a media block of, it turns out it was just me and you.
Oh, man, it's good to be the king, isn't it, John?
It's good to be the king.
Yeah, it was funny, man. We thought we were like, we'll show up and there'll be like 10 people. We're like, oh, no, just the two of us. So we both had a chance to get one-on-ones with UFC President Dana White. And I'll play mine since I don't have the audio rights to the Mac Life's work. But then we'll talk about it all. So here is my conversation with Dana White.
Well, Dana, you said, 12 months ago we didn't even know what Fight Island was, right? And now here we are kicking off the year in Fight Island. So, are these trips still, like, special to you? What's the feeling? And how much is Fight Island going to play into 2021?
Yeah, it's good to be here right now. I'm happy to be here again. Was the perfect amount of time in between trips, and I don't know, man. I don't know how long we're going to keep doing. We're going to be doing fights in Abu Dhabi forever, but I don't know how long this is going to go on. But as long as we need to put on international fights and get people in from all over the world, Fight Island is going to live on.
Do you have a guess right now? I mean, I know everything's unpredictable. Do you have a guess at, like, how many times we'll be out here? How many cards will be held here in 2021?
I have no idea yet. I'm just taking this thing fight by fight. You know, I mean, last time we talked, you know, we did the 5-week stint here. I didn't know when we were going to come back, but what made sense was the end of January, and here we are.
Limited fans in the building, right? I know you said you want to wait, but you had always said Abu Dhabi, you let them do what they want because they're great partners. What's your feeling? As you know, we're going into this. I mean, are you excited to have fans there? Are you nervous at all about, you know, how it'll work operationally? What's your feeling on it?
Nah, I mean, if you notice what we've been doing at the Apex and here is I made sure that we always ran an in-house show at the fights so those guys stayed on their game and, you know, no, this is going to be a show just like any other show.
Yeah,
I prefer to have the place sold out and have that real energy, but, you know, these guys wanted to do it, so we're doing it.
Is there any chance that, you know, come these fight nights, you hear the roar of the crowd and, you know, it adds something and maybe you go, you know what, maybe something's better than nothing?
You might be right. That might happen, yeah. Maybe that will happen.
Nice.
Three shows. First one's on ABC, right? Back on network television. Tell me, I mean, it hasn't had a lot of fanfare, right? I mean, it wasn't like press conferences and things like that. But, I mean, is this a big moment to be back on network television?
Yeah, I'm excited about it. And obviously, listen, if you look at what we've accomplished over the last several months, you know, it's a big deal. And the one thing that you know you can count on with sports right now is the UFC. So for ABC to say, hey, we want you to come on the network and put on an event. It feels good. I'm happy about it.
Right now, we only know one event, but it would seem to make sense. I mean, obviously, it's a big partnership. I mean, are we going to see more of the UFC on ABC, or is this a test run, so to speak?
I don't know. You know, they wanted us to throw this on ABC, and we're going to do it. So, yeah, we'll go out. I think, you know, it's always, when you're on television, no matter where you are, it's about the main event. And I couldn't be happier, couldn't be a better main event to be on ABC than Holloway and Cater. So yeah. I'm happy about it.
I was going to ask you about that fight. I mean, we know what it means for Calvin Kattar, right? I mean, this guy's on the way up, and he wants to prove he belongs to the elite. I wonder what you think of Max Holloway, right? I mean, he's had a couple losses, a couple setbacks. I mean, is this, I don't want to say a must-win or a make-or-break, but do you feel like this is one of those kind of crossroads fights in his career where he tries to stay, he's still in the elite status?
Well, you got to look. I mean, he believes, and other people believe, that he won the last title fight. So, you know, the guy's had a couple losses against the guy who is the world champion right now. And was the number one contender. So it's not like the guy has lost, you know, like he's slowing down or whatever. He's still one of the baddest dudes in the world. And I expect that fight to be insane.
Yeah, no question. It's going to be fun. It's meaningful in the title picture. Volkanovski, Ortega, is that still the plan right now for the title fight in that division? And do we have a date on that yet?
Don't have a date. Okay. Don't have a date.
Yeah. Yeah. That's still the plan, right? Fair enough. I want to ask you about the co-main as well, Matt Brown and Carlos Condit, right? That was a fight that kind of got moved around a little bit. But a co-main on network television, I guess the logic there. Is that just like a fight that there's no way it can suck at all? So you said, this has got to be on network television?
Yeah, and I don't see that one going three full rounds either. You know, two legendary savages in the co-main event. It's going to be fun.
Pretty fantastic. On Wednesday, we go to ESPN, Michael Chiesa and Neil Magny. I know that wasn't the original main event, but you went with that one. What was it about that fight that you identified, hey, we're comfortable putting this in a headliner on ESPN?
Magny is always. Listen, Magny, in my opinion, never gets the credit that he deserves. This guy's fought everybody. He's willing to fight anybody, anywhere, anytime. You have to love guys like that. And I'm actually happy for him to be getting a main event slot. And Chiesa's a stud and been around for a long time, too. So this is a much-deserved fight. You know, not the one that we had planned to be there, but great for both of these guys.
Yeah. I wonder what you thought about Leon Edwards. I know you said Edwards and Khamzat was the fight to make, so you're going to keep it together. But was there any thought of, like, dude, it's been like 18 months since Leon Edwards has fought. Like, let's just get him anything.
No. No, that's the fight we want to keep intact. We think that's a fun fight. What's the date on that?
March 13th,
that's the main event.
March 13th, headlining.
Main event, March 13th.
Fantastic, fantastic. Then, of course, we get to 257, right? I mean, the crown jewel, the pay-per-view, Conor McGregor's back. I mean, give me just the excitement level to be starting the year with Conor McGregor in a pay-per-view headliner.
Yeah, no, it's one thing to have Conor back. It's another thing to have Conor back. I mean, this is the motivated, you know, when Conor is like he is right now, you're guaranteed free. And I just saw a thing with Poirier yesterday where Poirier's like, let me tell you what, if you think that I'm the same guy that fought Conor last time, you're out of your mind. You're going to see a war. And I believe every word of it. I think that this is the right fight at the right time for both of these guys, and I think it's going to be fun.
You've been saying that Conor's kind of switched on right now, right? That you feel like he's dialing in. What do you think motivates him right now, right? I mean, the guy's done everything in the sport. He's obviously got a ton of money in the bank. So what gets him going and gets him dialed into these slots like he is now?
I think time off is what's given him this. You know, he's as famous can be. You said he's got all the money in the world. You know, there's a lot of things that drive you crazy about this sport. And it gets you to a point where you're just like, I don't want anything to do with this right now. And then once you get away from it for a while, you start to remember all the things that you love about it. All, you know, and I can imagine for a fighter, I don't know, I couldn't speak on that side, you know, the level of training that they do and fight week and all the things that go into it. But I think you start to miss it. And I think that's where he was. And I've seen it happen with so many other guys too. I think that's his motivation right now.
Yeah. I know we're all excited about it. The weird thing, his name keeps getting brought up with Manny Pacquiao in boxing. I mean, would that be something you're interested in at all, or should we just, as MMA fans, go, stop talking about it, get rid of it, it's just never going to happen?
If he beats Poirier next Saturday, he is, you know, he's one of the best mixed martial artists in the world. We did the boxing thing. I would love to see him fight for the title, or I'd like to see him do that stuff. Yeah, I mean, a fight with Manny Pacquiao or any other boxers, those fights are always going to be there in his career. So it's not something that I'm thrilled about.
Nice. Do we have a date dialed in for the Khabib meeting yet? Is that scheduled and on the books?
No, not yet. I'm not sure exactly when he gets here, but when he does, we'll connect. I texted him before I left Vegas and I said, see you soon.
When it does happen, are you expecting to walk away with clarity like that day on what the future of the lightweight division, or is it a situation where he'll say, let's meet again in a month and figure this out? I mean, what are you expecting out of that meeting?
It's going to be a 5-minute conversation. It's yes or no. It's yes or no. I mean, when I left Abu Dhabi last time and he and I were texting, we went back and forth on why I think he should keep fighting. And, he was super emotional coming out of that fight. So he's had time now to rest, think about it, all the other things. This is going to be a 5-minute conversation.
So you already started the hard sell on him. Are you feeling good? I know you said you thought you could talk him into it. Are you feeling good, or was he pushing back?
Yeah, I think he'll fight, but we'll see. It's not going to be an argument or, a lengthy conversation. It's going to be a yes or no.
Right. Outside of Fight Island, I wanted to ask you, a big article came out this week about Spencer Fisher. He's kind of gone public, I guess, with everything that he's been dealing with, potential CTE, that sort of thing. Now that that's all been made public, I mean, do you have any thoughts on that situation? I know you tried to financially help him out for a little while. I mean, do you have any thoughts on that situation? Is there anything, we can learn from that situation?
Listen, we're all learning every day about the brain injury stuff, we've been invested in this Ruvo Center to try to figure out more. We're now interested in this thing just came out on Real Sports about psychedelics. And we've actually reached out to the Johns Hopkins guys and, we're diving into that. But listen, he's not the first and he's definitely not going to be the last. I mean, this is a contact sport. And anybody who's ever done this younger, myself included, is dealing with brain issues. It's part of the gig.
Yeah. The Trump presidency is coming to a close. I wanted to ask, I mean, obviously you said friend, business partner for a long time. Being how divisive the whole situation was, do you wish maybe you hadn't got involved in the political side of things at all? I mean, it's just a crazy scene. Do you wish you would have steered clear of that at all?
Listen, I'm not a political person as it is. But, I've been friends with this guy for 20 years.
Last thing, 2020 was a crazy year. You said one of the most trying, but you got through it. It was a successful year. Talk to me about 2021. Can you envision the future at all? What do you see? Tease us a little bit on what we can see. You're always saying stay tuned. We're going to blow your mind. What are we going to see in 2021?
Yeah, we're working on some cool stuff. I mean, every year I say to you guys, we're going to take this to another level, this year included. So, we're working on some interesting stuff. Hopefully, midsummer maybe, early fall, we'll drop a bomb on everybody.
come on, you got to do more than that.
You'll see. I could tell you I'd announce it, but, we got to get it done first.
Yeah. Last thing for me, I did want to ask. I was intrigued by you telling Brett Okamoto that maybe Zhang Weili would fight in China, right? So, I mean, while you said you're focused on Fight Island, you're focused on Vegas, you are starting to explore the possibility of other sites around the world?
Yeah, places that will open. I will go. I will be the first. I promise you that. I mean, we know it. So any of these places that start to open, whether it's a Florida or a Texas, and I mean really open, I'll be there.
All right, so there it was with UFC President Dana White. That was the kind of kick off the week, which was kind of cool. We got out of quarantine. That was kind of one of the first things we got to do was to go see his private gym setup that he's got set up over there at the W and knock out an interview with him. And a couple things I want to talk about, and then of course, we'll talk about some of the things that popped up in your conversation with him as well. First thing was that I really tried to get him to, I don't want to say necessarily commit, but at least give a little prediction, and he wouldn't at all, which I guess is totally fair, as to how many times we'll be back to Abu Dhabi in 2021. I guess it's totally fair. I mean, how many times did he tell us in 2020, like, I don't even know what's going on with my own business. How am I supposed to predict anything? I believe it. I don't take that he knows more than he's going to let on to us, that's for sure, but I don't necessarily doubt that he doesn't really know how many times we're going to be back here. But I don't know. Do you have a anything in your gut on and I struggle to say that because like so much is based around like medicine and stuff, right? That has like nothing to do with us, like vaccine distribution and things like that. They're like way beyond the scope of anything we know. But I mean, do you have any like prediction in your gut that tells you how many times we'll be back here or how much of a role Fight Island continues to play in 2021?
I don't know, man, because a lot of my speculation is always built around the fighters they book on certain cards, you know. So like Israel, when I saw him booked in March, I was like, oh, that's probably a Fight Island card,
right?
But then the more it gets stacked up, you see with like Vegas, okay, yep, that's probably Vegas then. So that, I don't know about that. But then Volkanovski, I think, is in March as well. I mean, there's rumors of two pay-per-views.
Right.
Rumors. But if Volkanovski's fighting one, then I would probably assume that was here. So, I don't know. I think we're going to be back here sporadically. I mean, it feels like we're going to come back here 4 weeks on, 3 months off, 4 weeks on, 3 months off. I feel like that's the way it's going to work.
Yep.
But Dana did say in an interview with Brett that they were looking at Asia for a fight with Wiley and stuff like that. It's almost like a bit of a mind fuck to think that I would rather. I'm kind of like, it is what it is with Abu Dhabi now. I understand the Fight Island experience, as it were. I'm almost at a point where it's like, I'd rather they just stick with this and stick with the Apex and not like take us to a new place to try and finagle. Like, you know, so they're going to Asia because Asia's open, but I don't know. Like, it's.
I know.
I'm not like someone who thinks the world is ending because of COVID, but I'm still someone who is at least like, well, I'll stay the fuck away from it.
Yeah, trying to stay away from it,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, you know, I don't really want to get sick. That's all. I just don't feel like being in bed for 2 weeks. So I don't know how I feel about, like, just like he said, oh, we're knocking on the tires of some really like Florida. Well, I don't want to go to Florida at the moment. Thank you very much. So can we not do that? And Asia and stuff, you know. So I would feel comfortable with the sort of 4 weeks on here, 3 months off. That seems like a routine I could, you know.
I'm thinking we're at least doing like late March, early April, and I bet we come back in the summer sometime. And then if you think about it, that would kind of.
I think July will be here.
I agree.
Because they love an international fight week. Yep. They weren't able to do it this time, mostly because all the Brits kept coming over here and fucking everything up. But they want to do an international fight week. By July, Abu Dhabi will be open.
Right.
You know. I bet by the next time we come here, they'll try and tell the UFC don't do a bubble. I bet you. So whether that happens or not, I don't know. But by July, I think we're doing July here. This.
I think we'll be back in. I think we'll be back late spring and then summer for sure. Mm-hmm. We'll see. That's pure guess, pure speculation. But I am curious to see how much. I mean, we know Abu Dhabi's, and to be clear, Abu Dhabi is going to be. I mean, they already had a 5-year partnership in place.
Yeah.
You know, there's probably been some deals worked behind the scenes. Hell, it might be 10 years at this point. You know what I mean? Like, there's no way you go this heavy in a commitment for a short period of time and then don't.
I would say, I don't know if it's in writing, but I imagine both sides are like, well, let's just fucking do this until we feel like not doing it, you know?
Completely agree.
I don't think I'm breaking any like crazy like, but they own a bit, right? Some part of Abu Dhabi owns a bit of the UFC.
They reinvested, as I recall. Yeah, so.
Do they not just get to tell them, like, well, we own this much percent of you, and we want this much percent of the calendar here?
Oh, man. We'll see. We'll see how it plays out. There's no question it's been incredibly valuable to the UFC.
I also think as well, remember what we had we got to chat with Dana about the Khabib stats and Facebook stuff and stuff like that? The way he was talking about Fight Island and stuff like that, I personally believe they could reach a point where they make it a yearly thing, like a Fight Island block.
Mm-hmm.
Probably Saturday, Wednesday, Saturday of a decent fights to rival International Fight Week.
So
they get all the Europeans to come here.
100%.
The Octagon on the beach, all that stuff.
Yep.
I believe that they'll try and make that like an annual
thing. I think
so too.
It won't be just like we come here and do one Saturday night.
No, I think it's like a thing. It'll be Saturday, Wednesday, Saturday, and that's where we go.
Completely agree.
That's where we're headed.
Completely agree. It's crazy, right? I mean, like we talk about the history.
And I don't want it.
We talk about the history and stuff. I mean, obviously, you know, this COVID in 2020 would be taught in history books forever. And I think that's what's always been interesting to us, right? It's not just fights, but we're kind of documenting some history, whatever. But it is crazy, like how much this probably changed the direction of this partnership and the direction of this relationship and how much think about how much this could change, how much MMA is important in the Middle East, you know what I mean? Like in the entire region.
Well, I was talking about this with, I think, the Raptors, Dan Hardy's guys, the other day, and we were talking about how big MMA has felt because it was the only sport going, blah, 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 how big it's all.
Mm-hmm.
And I was reminded by an interview that Dana did, I believe, did an interview where he was like, you know, if you get someone from China, X many people sure. that live there, like India is still a completely untapped. Completely untapped. And there's millions, like maybe billions.
Billions.
In India. And he said if you had an Indian champion versus an Asian champion, like and you could stream it worldwide like you can, he was like, with them we're talking views. Well, if you think that they're setting up in the Middle East, I know India's not. Is it in the Middle East? Does it count? No, it's not. It's East Asia. It's East Asia. Excuse my ignorance. I should know. I'm British and Indian. Anyway, sorry. But yeah, I think the UFC love to set up like pillars of strength.
Sure.
Around in regions, you know. So they set up one in Europe. They set up one in North America. And they sometimes it's harder than I think. But I think they've probably. You remember how you used to say Canada was like MMA's home for a while?
Right.
I think for at least the next 5 years, the Middle East will be home to MMA. Almost.
I know that Dane is being a little like facetious when he says the new fight capital of the world. Like, of course, that's bravado, right?
Yeah,
that's
hyperbole. Yeah,
hyperbole. But there's some legitimacy to it too. You know what I mean?
Like until the other one can open,
right?
You know, like
I say, it's the international fight capital of the world.
I like it, John. Trademark it, put it on a shirt, send it to John Oliver.
We're still the domestic fight capital of the world in Las Vegas. All right, here's the other one that's interesting, right? And I won't say that Dana White downplayed this in the conversation, but I feel a little bit surprised that the ABC buzz is kind of subdued. Like, network television, I mean, I guess this is the time when you can't do a big press conference. You think about the Fox deal, right. And, you know, Joe Rogan in a suit and looking silly. You don't know, and he doesn't want to wear that.
Yeah.
You know, we had like a big thing, and this one, I don't know. Like, I mean, not that I want to. I mean, I feel weird that Junkie was the one that reported this. I'm not downplaying that you know our reporting skills or our importance in the space. But to me, that seems like a huge thing that they would want to make sure that they were out in front of, screaming from the mountaintops. You know,
how many times have we seen the UFC like big up something that you and I are like, well, that's. It's not really that big a deal,
right,
but you know what
right.
I mean? I'll tell you, from my own perspective as an international person, I don't really understand the network TV and stuff.
I get it.
But when they went on Fox with Kane and JDS, I didn't know like how big a deal that was, but they fucking made sure I did.
Right.
By the time the fights happened, they're like, this is a massive deal for us. Apparently, ABC's a really big deal. Doesn't feel like it.
That's what I get.
I almost feel like they don't really want to talk about it.
I know.
I almost feel like Dana was kind of like, yeah, no, it's cool. Yeah, we don't even know if it's going to continue. Like, talk about downplaying.
I know. And you and I were talking about this a little bit off the air before you guys started. The one thing that I'll say, and again, pure guess, pure speculation, pure whatever. The only thing I can think is, look, they are going against the NFL playoffs.
Right.
I know, again, that's an American thing, but I understand that you get how big the NFL is. I mean, it's our national sport in the United States. I wonder if that's part of it, is that they realize, look, the ratings for this are going to be good. They're going to be good.
That's what's like early in the morning as well, right?
but they're not going to be amazing because it's going against the NFL. And so I wonder if that's the thing, is like, hey, let's not have this as our debut. Let's not big up this as our thing. Let's just make it look like we just oh are we on ABC? I just stubbed my little toe
Goodness
in the water.
Gracious, I fell and I'm here.
Did our signal end up on the wrong satellite here? What happened?
It's easy as ABC.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, I wonder if there's something to that where they like look. They know that it's going to be successful. It's going to be good. But I wonder if they know, like, dude, if we're going against the NFL, we're not going to kill it.
Yeah,
so let's not blow it out of the water.
I would believe strongly that's a possibility. I also wonder maybe, is there a strategy in acting like network television isn't a big deal for your brand anymore? Like, yeah, of course we're fucking network television. Look at us. Look how big we are. Like, this is the logical place we ended up.
It's interesting.
You know, it's not like Dana and the UFC to let something go without an opportunity for a bit of pizzazz.
Right.
But maybe in the circumstance they thought, well, we can't really do a presser. We can't really, like, bush it to the moon. So let's just act like we've been here before.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, ABC. It's cool.
And you have. You've been on network television before. I found that interesting. And that may be something that the average fight fan doesn't care about. But I like you said, they don't let things go without blowing it up.
Put it this way. UFC on Fox. We were talking the other day in a very mundane conversation, but we were drinking for 3 hours. But we're talking about the naming conventions of UFC fight nights and stuff like
right.
that. When UFC on Fox came around, this is peeling back the curtain a bit, I knew that to get the best views, you would title it UFC on Fox.
Absolutely.
Right? That's how people are looking for. This time around, I don't feel like UFC on ABC is going to outshine UFC Fight Island 7 or something like that. Do you know what I mean? Like, I think I don't feel like UFC on ABC has been pushed as a big deal at all. I don't think anyone cares. In fact, it's almost too many letters. And I just think it's kind of been really downplayed. And I'm surprised they've chosen that
route. It's very much an inside baseball type conversation, but I find it interesting. All right. Okay. Pure speculation. I don't know if you here's what I was surprised. And you're going to have, I don't want to say a bias slant on this, but I would be curious to hear what your thoughts are on this. I have not had a chance to see your Conor McGregor interview yet, but
it's
I guarantee you guys touched on it, so I want to hear about it. I said from the very beginning, and I didn't feel like I was necessarily rubbing a crystal ball or anything like that, but I just thought it made sense. I said from the very beginning that I would not be shocked if on the week of UFC 257, all of a sudden now it's for the UFC lightweight title, right? I mean, we know meaning. I said that from the beginning. Now, I know that Dana White has since come out. I think it was the interview with Brett Okamoto where he said, right, like there's no way that's going to happen. But I thought that maybe at some point we would hear from Habib and we would find out he's not coming back. Or maybe he would come back and it wouldn't be. But I guess what I thought was if Habib decided he wasn't coming back, that the UFC would just sprinkle a little salt on the give it a little extra flavor. Like, oh, by the way, did we not tell you? You know, yes, we've got Conor McGregor coming back. Yes, it's the rematch with Dustin Poirier. Yes, it's a fantastic fight. And, oh, by the way, it's for the undisputed UFC lightweight title. I don't know. It's been shut down. It's not going to happen. I don't know, but bummed at all, I guess, that it's not going to be for the title. Did you ever hold out hope that it could be? Did Conor? I mean, I guess Conor probably always like thought it would be nice, right, if I could walk right back in and get my belt.
Actually, to be fair to Conor, in the interview I did with him today, which I recommend watching, it's on YouTube, MacTime, he said...
If you're not one of the 1 million subscribers, all you have to do is just click on that button right there.
But he said...
maybe give it a like.
He said, after last year, I didn't exactly think I'd be bouncing in there and Dana's going to throw me a belt. Which I was like, okay, fair enough.
That's fair, right? I mean, they publicly, it's not like we're pulling the curtain back. Yeah. They publicly talked about
it. Yeah, so he said, I didn't exactly think my Dana's going to be throwing me a belt. And he's like, and I get it. He's like, I think it should be for the title. This is what he said to me. He's like, I think it should be for the title. I think, you know, they've given Khabib time. He hasn't sort of given them whatever answer. He's like, so yeah, why not? Let's put a belt on it. For me, I never really thought they were going to. Because of what Conor said, I felt like Dana might be like, I'm fucking welcoming you back with a belt. And I think if he speaks to Khabib and Khabib says, I'm done, I don't think they'd put a belt on it this late because that's so much promotion that they've missed out on. Like, you know, and
True.
Dana's always impressed upon us the importance of having a title fight, right? So remember they were going to put Dustin Poirier and Nate as co-main to like Valentina to Tajara Eubanks because they were the champions.
Yep.
I would argue that's you're not setting the right fight in that, but you know they've always like impressed the importance of championships. So I think if they got a Conor McGregor title fight, I think they would want more than like a few days to really.
That makes sense. Yeah, that's a good. I guess I thought it would be like just that little extra push at the end. Like, but you are, you know what, now that. Okay, now that we're here on Fight Week or the week ahead of time, you're right. I thought it would be like kind of that extra. Like he's already
nice.
Out there anyway.
Well, remember when Masvidal stepped in? I asked Dana one time. I was like, "Oh, Masvidal stepped in. The pay per view went fucking insane. Have we reached a point now where you don't need months of pre-fight stuff?
Right.
You can just sort of do it, and the world is that it is. Like, it can consume information enough that you don't need that sort of lengthy promotion."
Yeah.
He disagreed. So. I'll take his word for it.
Yeah.
He apparently knows what he's doing.
Interesting. All right, listen, I want to say one other thing real quick this was a very fast-moving interview, and I think it'll continue to be a point of discussion, but I just did want to give a shout-out to former colleague Stephen Morocco, of course, over at MMA Fighting. The Spencer Fisher story that he put out this week is intense, and it's really, really good. And I'm sure at this point, if you're listening to this podcast, you know enough about MMA, you're probably aware of this. If you're not, search it out on MMA Fighting. That'll be the last time you ever hear me recommend you go to MMA Fighting for a story. But I believe it's the Cost of Being King. I believe is how they entitled it. So I'm sure if you Google it that way, you'll be able to find it. But Spencer Fisher, and this was a story. I'll just tell you. I mean, this is a story that Stephen Morocco has been working on even way back in the time that he was working for MMA Junkie as well. But nobody would go on record, so there was no way for him to report it. And finally, he got Spencer Fisher to open up and to be willing to go on record. And man, he put a ton of effort into this. And obviously, the entire crew over at MMA Fighting supported his efforts and put that in. It's a long-ass read. And hey, look, I'm just like anybody else. I'm not the kind of guy that's is reading, you know, books on a daily basis or whatever. I got a ton of stuff going on. But it is a very good story and a very, I guess I'd say, sobering story, man. We talk about it sometimes, man. Sometimes we get so caught up in, you know, our passion for the sport and the storylines and the excitement and the beefs and the all that stuff that we forget that these guys are going in and doing hand-to-hand combat, and they're literally putting their it sounds like hyperbole again to say like they're putting their lives on the line, but no, they are.
Look at boxing, man. I think last year 3 people died. Was it last year? No, maybe 2019 or something.
Wow.
Definitely got those figures wrong, but I've had 4 glasses of whiskey now, so fuck it. They are putting lives on the line, and I think we, as conscious as we think we are of the dangers of this sport,
yep.
You know, I'm sure in 10 years we'll be looking back at now and be like, oh, we thought we knew anything then.
Right.
You know, now we're only reaching a point now where the public consensus is it's not the knockouts that fuck you up, it's the sparring that fucks you up.
Right.
We're only just got there.
And listen,
the sport's 25 years old.
And I think that story, the Spencer Fisher story, I think shared a lot of that. You know, they talk about the gym wars he went through, man, and that is a huge part of it. And boy, I tell you what, I mean, you know, we had conversations with a couple of fighters. Now, we've only seen one card where the fighters, we haven't got to the other two. But a lot of them talked about that, right? I mean, it seemed like most fighters, especially the older ones like Matt Brown, Carlos Condit, you know, they read the story, they were aware of the story.
Matt Brown was very interesting about
it. Matt Brown's very, very intriguing.
And, it's not just the older fighters, there's certain type of fighters as well, right? Like Matt Brown,
the brawlers,
and Carlos, like, they've been through some fucking wars, man. And it's kind of catch-22. Were they able to go through those wars because they went through those wars in the gym? You know, it's not about, oh, this is a real bit of a tangent. Muhammad Ali supposedly used to let sparring partners beat the shit out of him because he believed that if you got beaten up in training, your body would become accustomed.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, he used to let sparring partners like beat up on him because he felt that your body would become accustomed to being beaten up, so you'd become tougher. I don't believe physically that's the case, but I would imagine there's something mentally to the fact that if I can get beaten up in training, I can get beaten up in this fight. I believe that to be the case. So maybe these guys having wars in training probably helped their career, probably shorten their lives.
Yeah, I mean, it does seem like everybody's moving forward. I mean, everything that I hear now, but how great was it that Matt Brown and Carlos Condit both talked about the importance of coaches, right? Of coaches looking out for people, right? Of having your fighter's best interest at heart, because I think they realize as those type of warriors that hey, we're not going to look out for ourselves. You know what I mean? Like, we're not going to make the most intelligent decisions. You got to look out for us. So, but you know, making that type of change, and it does seem like it is getting a bit more widespread and understood that, like, look, in the beginning of your career, you absolutely need to spar hard. Like, you need to know what it feels like to get hit, to what full speed onslaught feels like. You need to know that. But then after that, like, once you learn that, now you need to worry about drilling and technique and timing and not going in there and getting your bell rung every day in practice.
Well, look at the, like, Max Holloway doesn't spar in training.
Right.
Robbie Lawler stopped sparring for a while. I think Cerrone stopped sparring for a while. Connor and SBG say, you know, upgrade the hardware, software, don't damage the hardware.
Right.
I think it's starting to seep through.
Right.
I think there'll always be those kind of, it's probably, it depends what level you're at, right? Because I think if you're at a low level gym, you'll always have sort of meatheads that get attracted to it, and it's part and parcel of it. And look, I think even if you train smarter than anyone in the world, you don't get into MMA and get out freely, you know?
Well, listen,
even fucking GSP is like, I don't know where I am for 30 minutes at a time.
I know that, you know, Dana's, and again, this was a fast-moving interview. We didn't spend a lot of time on it, but Dana's comments, I did see a lot of slack where people are like, you know, oh, Dana just says, well, this is part of the fight game. But Matt Brown and Carlos Condit said the same thing.
Well, that's amazing.
You know, and they said, look, you don't get into this and think that you're not getting out of it, like, with something.
I think it sounds, like, callous. It sounds like we don't care. It sounds like, oh, we're dismissing it as, like, oh, well, such is life. But, I mean, as I said to you after we left the Dana thing, like, did anyone think it was good for you?
No.
Did anyone think, like, I'm going to go get punched in the head a lot, and then I'm going to learn pi,
right?
Like 10 figures of it.
Right.
I'm going to be able to rattle off math.
Like, I understand why, I mean, and again, I can't take myself back to the 70s or 80s or anything like that, but I kind of understand why, like, even football players, but like hockey players, soccer players, whatever, like, I kind of understand why they didn't realize that there was problems, but
prize fighting.
Like.
Well, especially, like, so MMA is obviously, comes from boxing and other stuff, but boxing. Dude, punch drunk is an expression in the dictionary for people who get hit in the head a lot.
Yeah.
Well,
I mean, the scientific name was pugilistic dementia for CTE, right? Pugilistic dementia.
Guess what? It's not good for you. And if anything, rather than criticize Dana for sort of sounding blasé about it, and rather than criticizing the sport, I would rather take this opportunity to, A, feel fucking awful for Spencer at any... Not just, but even more his loved ones who have to be around him and deal with it. I'd rather use this as a learning curve. All you pieces of shit who tweet fighters who lose, oh, you're a fucking pussy and stuff like that. This is what they risk. And half of them don't even make it anywhere. So how about we show them a bit more respect that the fact that they're being able to put themselves at risk for a feeling of like they want to do this. No one gets into MMA because they're like, I'm going to make a fucking shit ton. They get into it because they have an outlet and they want to pursue it. So instead of, oh, let's use this as a way to damage sport, let's use this as an opportunity to realize that we're dealing with incredibly, they might not all be smart, they might not all be like wise, but they're all brave.
Yep.
So let's take this as a learning opportunity to realize that we're dealing with it, phenomenal athletes and people, and stop criticizing them and just realize like, fuck man, these guys are giving us their life.
It's well said. That's well said, man. It really is. I mean, it may sound silly, but that disrespect that you see sometimes, I think people forget about what they really are putting on the line. And I think that's well said. Now that's from our point of view, or at least from the fan point of view. From the fighter point of view, look, I'm being 100% honest. I've been covering the sport for a long time. I am not bullish I'm not bullish on the possibility of fighter organization happening. I've seen it start and stop
unions?
And fail. Yeah, I've seen it start and stop and fail to me, but. Hopefully, maybe this is a topic that can get people to think about it a little bit more. You know what I mean? If there was something that could be done to take... Because, look, I don't care what you think about Dana White, what you think about the UFC. Dude, I'm sorry, but no company on earth is going to lay out what is going to be millions and millions and millions of dollars to talk about, you know, taking care of people post-career unless their hand is forced a little bit. No, there is no company out there. I mean, dude, look at the billions that Amazon is raking in right now. Like, if there's a company that could change the world in a heartbeat and not, are they doing? I mean, I know they are doing some things. I'm not trying to say they're not doing it, but what I mean?
Fuck like, fuck Bezos.
Right? But you know what I'm saying? Like, nobody's out there just you know what? I just feel like we need to just lay out billions for this.
No,
they need to get together somehow.
One of our peers and colleagues said something, I cannot remember. It might have been Ben Folks. I don't know. Maybe I'm giving him too much credit. I don't know. Someone said, if you're able to sign a fighter's likeness and rights for in perpetuity, you should probably pay them insurance for the equal amount of time. I thought that's a fair deal. If you want to use them in video games for 10 years after they've retired, I feel like you should have to at least cover them for some stuff.
Not a bad idea. Like, as long as I'm making money, as long as I can sell your likeness right.
If I'm making money off you, I got to cover you in some way.
Yeah.
That seems to me like a very fair transaction. You know?
Covering your medical insurance. I'm not saying I'm covering every medical expense
you
have.
I'm not saying, like, if you break your leg skateboarding.
Right.
Probably not.
But I'm carrying you for insurance.
If you're showing signs like this Spencer is of serious degenerative brain disease, and I don't want this sort of like bullshit, like we're going to send you to a doctor and he's going to be like, well, there's no conclusive evidence. Like,
if you
got punched in the fucking head a lot, we'll just agree that that's probably a bit of a factor. I think it's absolutely completely fair to say, look, if we're going to use your likeness, if we're going to put you in the Hall of Fame, if we're going to have you in the video game even after you've retired... Like, I think it's fair to ask to take care
of
some guys.
It's fair. If we're selling our library, if somebody's paying us licensing fees for our library. Now, look, if they're only paying, like, I would say that if they're only paying us for live events, well, you're no longer a part of those live events anymore.
Yeah.
So now, but if, yes, they are replaying our fights and they're paying us and your fight is being replayed, you know, it's like, kind of like a royalty for music, right? Like, every time your song gets downloaded on iTunes.
But you can make a deal where, okay, we're not going to pay you every time we play your fight.
Right, right.
But look,
as long as it's in the rotation.
So someone who comes to mind, like,
This is like pure, just random. Don't take this as if I know anything. Don Fry.
Right.
Right. How many times do you think his fight with
Takayama, even though it's over in Pride, but still, they do own Pride now, so it's still technically a UFC fight.
But like, how many times have they played that?
Oh, ad nauseum.
And how many times do you reckon the 3,000 punches he took in that fight probably fucked him up a little bit?
Right.
There you go.
Something to that.
Do you know what I mean?
Something to that. That's not a bad idea.
I'm not even one of these, like, not irrational. It's a fair thing, and I understand it. But I'm not one of these people who's like, oh, you have to pay them more, whatever. I think fighters should get paid more. Mm-hmm. But I'm not one of these people who can't see the logistics of a business and how that plays out. But I think this is an area, like, the UFC want to be better and more structured than boxing. Here's an opportunity. Like, you know, they've done such good work with the PI. So nutrition is better in this sport than in boxing.
Yeah.
They've done a great job with loads of other shit that I can't think of right now.
The PI has been fantastic. Yeah, I know a lot of people, like, in the beginning were like, whatever. What is this? But right. The athletes will tell you how amazing it's been for them.
They've done loads of good shit. And I think this is an area, like, if you gave someone health insurance even after they retired from fighting, it's not a bad look, dude.
It's not a bad look, man.
It's good for PR. Like, fucking just do it.
Great for PR. Wouldn't be cheap.
Yeah, well, they're doing all right. They got a bit of cash.
They're doing all right.
They're building a hotel.
All right, let's talk about this card a little bit. UFC on ABC 1. Listen, this main card, I said it a week ago when I started getting a little understanding what the main card was going to look like. It's fantastic. Max Holloway versus Calvin Kattar. We saw them today at a face-off. Did you glean anything from the face-off? I mean, look, they're not the most...
No.
I know. That's why I was just trying to get that. I mean, they're not trash talkers, but not only are they not trash talkers, like, they're not the kind of person that's going to, like, bow up on you or try... I mean, look. They made it clear they're there. They weren't breaking eye contact. It was good, but it wasn't anything where, like, hey, one guy's trying to stare into another guy's soul or they're trying to talk to him about anything. So I didn't take too much out of the face-off today other than it was a photo opportunity, and that's cool. Respectful guys, not trash-talking guys. I'm excited for the fight. I think stylistically it should be very, very exciting.
Probably one of the best we're going to see.
I am thrilled by it. It's weird that Calvin Kattar is the older guy, right?
Isn't that weird?
Yeah, it's weird. I think that's so funny, man. He's been around the game for a long time.
How old is Max?
32 for Calvin Kattar, 29 for Max Holloway.
Max Holloway is my age.
Oh, is that right?
Please don't tell me I'm older than Max Holloway.
Maybe I got that wrong.
Oh, my God.
He's 29.
Max Holloway is 29 years old.
What have you? I mean, are you saying that you haven't lived up to Max Holloway in terms of accomplishments?
I'm older than Max Holloway. Oh my God! How long was his undefeated streak?
The world just changed for you. He was a baby when he came to the UFC.
How young is that guy?
And he was like, I can't remember if he was. I think it was just 20 when he came.
He's
to the
arguably
UFC.
Not even in his athletic.
In his athletic
prime.
Prime. Well, see, that's what I'm. Okay, so that. That's what I'm intrigued by here, right? Like, Calvin Kattar is like the hot commodity.
He's older than Holloway.
Calvin Kattar is the hot commodity here, right? Like, he's the guy that seems to be on the streak up. But, you know, you think back to Max Holloway. And listen, I know I'm in the minority here. I actually did score that last fight for Alexander Volkanovski. But those first two rounds, Max Holloway looks so damn good, man. He looks so damn good.
He's always accused of a slow starter as well, right?
Oh,
I think, oh, man, it's such an intriguing fight because I feel like both of them are just going to box. I feel like it's going to be very little kicking.
I do too.
And Calvin's a great boxer.
I know.
And I would argue that he hits harder than Max.
I think so.
And I think he's got good cardio.
Yep.
So Max's late flurry might not hurt him as much as it did like Brian.
Right.
But, man, Max is good at fighting.
See, that's where I'm – that's exactly where I'm at. I didn't want to set up too much. But, listen, in my official pick with MMA Junkie, I went for Calvin Kattar. But it's those things you said. I feel like this is going to be – the majority of it is going to be a boxing fight. And because of that, I'm not saying that Max Holloway is not a great boxer, but I feel like Calvin Kattar is just a touch above in boxing. Like, if they were to box, if they were to literally just box, I would pick Calvin Kattar.
Yeah. Well, I think because he hits harder.
Right.
You know, it just makes a difference. But then Max has Max ever been like properly dropped?
No.
Even Dustin like had him rocked bad, but never put him down. But
here's what I'm saying is, if you're gonna pick Calvin Kattar, does that mean you're fading Max Holloway and saying he does? Because I don't feel that way. Like, I don't feel that like I'm going to see a lesser version of Max Holloway. I guess it's, you know, the silly styles make fights type of thing. I guess that's what I'm leaning towards. I know it's a cliche, but I guess I'm leaning towards here. But I want to make sure that I'm maybe in my head I am giving too much to Max isn't 100% max anymore.
Yeah, it's funny, right? Because you could, well, the first Volkanovski fight I felt was pretty clear. But, you know, maybe he got his tactics wrong or something like that. He certainly wasn't hurt. You know, he was fine. He right. just was beaten. He was outpointed. The second fight was razor thin. The second fight, I think I scored it for max, but I remember it being one of those fights where it's like the rules kind of fucked him in that he won the fight, but he lost the bout.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
But, you know, so
yeah.
It's one of those ones. But, I mean, but when you just think of Max, oh, he's lost twice, you just sort of, in your brain, you're forced to imagine him as a lesser version of himself.
Yep.
But in actuality, he was so competitive against Volkanovski, and maybe Volkanovski's just that good. You know, we just don't, you know, he hasn't forged his own legacy yet. So it's quite possible that on Saturday, Max comes out and it's a Roy Jones moment, and Yoel must have forgotten, and he just kind of fucks Calvin up, which I have to be honest, I'd love to see, because I love a bit of Max.
Oh, Max is such a great
but
guy.
I love Calvin too. It's not to disrespect him, but like, man, it would fuck the UFC up if he did smoke Calvin, wouldn't it? They'd be like, what do we do with this guy?
What do we do now? God, we got to have him fight Volkan. Then I guess you just become an Ortega fan. Look, man, that's hard to, because I like Volkanovski a lot and I like Ortega a lot. I mean, obviously, two different guys.
Volkanovski's never going to be appreciated, man. He's going to be like Demetrius, I think, where no one's going to really, like, really get it until he's gone.
You're right about that. I think you're 100% right about that. Because here's the thing is, Volkanovski beat Ortega. We don't have a date on that, as we heard from talking to Dan earlier. We don't have a date on Volkanovski. Ortega, but if Volkanovski wins, even if Holloway beats Cater, I don't know if you can't go straight back to Holloway, right? At that point, I guess if you're the UFC, you're hoping for an Ortega win, right? Because the Ortega Holloway rematch would be pretty sick.
But then does Volkanovski get dicked because he's not like the most charismatic and fucking, you know, does then he get dicked? Like, they're gonna be like, well, yeah, you know, Holloway, he's the champion again, and you beat him twice, so the rematch doesn't make sense, even though he's the champion now. You know, does he get fucked up? I wouldn't be like opposed to the idea. Maybe this is a selfish thing as a fan. If Volkanovski beat Ortega and Max beat Calvin, I wouldn't mind the UFC saying to Max, "Here's a bit of money. Take 9 months off and put on 10 pounds."
Not a bad idea.
I'd like to see him go up because I think the Dustin thing. The Dustin fight is so interesting because they looked so different in weight. And I remember when Dana came back and was like, I thought Max was so undersized. I felt completely the same. But I rewatched it. Max actually kind of fucked up Dustin too in that fight.
Yep.
Because everyone forgets it because of the Izzy fight.
Of course.
But he actually really had moments.
Yeah, he did.
Dustin was just better that night.
Yeah.
Give him a bit of time to adjust to the weight. And I think Max could be decent at lightweight.
Yep.
So I would like to see it. I'd like to see Max... I'd like to see that move, and if he can't rematch Volkanovski because it's Volkanovski, I'd like to see him just pop up, you know?
It's big stakes.
Who doesn't want to see Holloway, like, Holloway Nate Diaz at 155? There you go. Book it. Done.
Matt Brown, Carlos Condit. Listen, I said it before, but I'll say it again. Brilliant matchmaking, I think, for network television especially. Like, known commodities, known names, and not superstars. I mean, I would say Condit is probably the more widespread name, of course. But anybody that likes MMA likes Matt Brown. Two guys that are going to bring it. And by the way, two guys who, as we spoke to this week, Matt Brown kind of teased that, hey, you know, maybe this will be my last fight. I don't think he was really saying it necessarily was. I think he basically said, I've been thinking about it a lot lately. I think about it every time I fight. But he did kind of seem... hey, man, maybe this could be it. Meanwhile, Carlos Condit said this is the last fight on my contract. So, I mean, a lot at stake here. But what was, I think, more amazing was the fact that both of them were like, oh, yeah, no, I got a lot of respect for my opponent, man. Like, a fellow legend, man, a great scrapper. And I'm going to fuck him up.
Yeah.
And I thought that was so amazing because both guys were just like, oh, no, I am so happy to be paired with a guy like this.
What a great guy, man. He's so cool.
And I'm going to fuck him up. And I was like, these are the OGs.
Yeah, it was awesome, dude. When you know, when you think of Carlos versus Matt Brown, you think, oh, this is going to be a bloodbath, a war. These two are going to hell. And then you spoke to Matt Brown. He's like, oh, no, I think I'm going to dominate him, actually. I think I'm better than him everywhere. And then Condit came back, and I was like, well, as a shit starer that I am, I said, oh, Matt says he's going to go through you. And he's like, oh, that's cool. That's nice. And then he just paused and went, I'm going to fuck him up. And you can see, like, switch. And, oh, dude, I tell you what, both of the guys exude the same sort of energy where it's calm, sociopath. You know, it's the both of them are just like so chilled.
Yeah.
Like, we walked
quiet
out
quiet volume.
We walked out of the media room. Carlos Condit is there looking at the board that people can sign their names on. He's like, well, who the fuck's that guy? You know, just having a good time. And then they can just switch. But they don't switch in like a crazy aggressive manner. They switch just like, oh, I'm going to get you.
Yeah. It's so good.
Yeah. I fucking love it. And when Condit said, I'm going to fuck him up, though, I was literally like, yes, yes. That's, man, the main event's great. But the co-main event is, I'm as anticipated. Well, I think it's co-main, right?
It is co-main. Yeah. Dude, well, listen, this thing has been bounced around from card to card. I mean, look, it was supposed to happen years ago, but even once it got booked here, it kept moving around. And I was like, where are they? Like, I actually had to, like, ask our staff one, because it had been reported on, like, three
cards. Yeah, it was all over the place.
I remember I literally asked our staff in chat one day on Slack. I was like, does anybody know what date this is actually happening? And then they put it in the co-main event on network television. And I was like, perfect.
You can either put it
absolutely
there.
Absolutely perfect.
Put it there or you put it as the opener. But they put it as opener and then they bleed the fuck out of it. People might be like, oh, God.
Yeah.
So I remember when...
I don't know if I should watch this.
Was it Shogun and Henderson went war to war and they're like, oh, do you wish that was on Fox instead? And he's like, probably
not. No, absolutely not. Fox executives don't. Yeah, that's been a fantastic one. All right, listen, we'll talk about a couple other fights, but I want to play a little... I don't want to say breaking news. It's kind of being announced as we're recording this, but I had a little insight on it. Before we sat down to record this, I had a chance to talk about... to talk with... Jeff Nowitzki, basically, about some pretty cool stuff that I think is going on. Listen, again, it might be one of those things that some people don't care about if you're just a fight fan, but I love stuff like this. Basically, the UFC and USADA have made a huge announcement, and I'll read you part of the press release here before we get into this interview, but it boils down to this. Positive tests for carboxy-THC, the psychoactive ingredient in cannabis, will no longer be considered a violation of the UFC anti-doping policy. So there you go. Weed tests will no longer be a violation of the UFC anti-doping policy, which I think is absolutely fantastic. And this is something I said all along. You cannot compete under the influence of marijuana. You can't compete under the influence of anything. But what they're going to look for is signs of impairment. That's not about a blood test that recognizes some nanogram thing that may mean something that may not, that detects something from weeks earlier, from whatever. It's going to be whether or not you're impaired. And I thought this was cool. We talk about this, but they actually used, the science they used to back this up was from a 2017 report from the U.S. Department of Transportation to Congress. I mean, they're not just out here going like, eh, we don't care if people smoke weed. Let's just get at it. So, listen, I had a chance to talk to Jeff Nowitzki about it. I think it's a spectacular. It's something that I've kind of been, you know, I'm not a huge cheerleader for change and that sort of thing. I feel like my job is just to document stuff, not to try to push it forward. But I've mentioned this once or twice before along the way, and I was glad to see it happen. So here was a conversation I had right before we sat down to do this with Jeff Nowitzki talking about the new rules.
Morgan, what's happening, buddy?
Not much, brother. How you doing?
I'm doing well. How's Fight Island?
It's not too bad, other than time change. You know what I mean? You never quite get a sleep schedule down. But, well, listen, let's get into it. I won't waste your time either, man. I mean, this is a kind of a big moment for a lot of people, right? I mean, this is change that a lot of people have been asking for. So give me the idea. What was the motivation? I mean, I know you see the complaints, and obviously there's growing national acceptance with marijuana and that sort of thing. But what's your motivation to get in and say, yes, let's make a change here. Let's make an impact.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. There's one motivation. It's fairness to athletes. And this, I mean, this came on my radar as soon as I got here, because that was right in the middle of Nick Diaz and Nevada's attempts to basically ban him for life for a marijuana test when, you know, he had a couple tests that night. I forget what the exact details were that were under the threshold and then one way over. And then right away, I'm like, there's something going on with these levels here that may not, you know, correlate exactly to what we're really concerned about, and that's impairment.
Right.
So, you know, I think that combined with what's happened over this last year, all these last minute ads because of the COVID era, and all these fighters testing positive, and me talking to them, them telling me, look, I stopped when I signed the contract on Tuesday or Wednesday. So, you know, we started looking harder and harder into the thought that, is there any correlation whatsoever between a level and impairment? And the answer is, there's really no science to support that. In fact, there's science, the opposite of that, that there isn't correlation. What we still care about, we don't want anybody fighting high and, you know, either being a danger to themselves or having an advantage. But, you know, clearly the levels in somebody's urine is not the answer to that.
Yeah, I thought it was really interesting because you guys cited the Department of Transportation study, right? That says cognitive test is the way to go in terms of impairment. I mean, it always seemed like common sense to me, right? Like levels don't matter, impairment does. I mean, that's like with alcohol, right? I mean, you can't let a fighter fight drunk, but you're not testing to see if they drank, you know, two nights before or something like that. So I don't know. I found that really interesting, right? I mean, you can't just make a common sense, you know, a common sense analysis. I guess did that study, was that very helpful in you guys reaching this conclusion?
Very helpful. I think it was the driving factor in, you know, USADA being willing to do it and us being, you know, we wanted some science to back this decision, and I think that does. And you know, clearly on a level of importance, somebody's freedom, you know, being arrested or convicted is at a higher level than, you know, than sports. And even in that world, they're saying, look, you can't rely on blood or urine tests. You have to, you know, rely on some type of visual evidence of impairment, whether it's a, you know, a cognitive impairment test or whatever. And so, yeah, that's the new prong that's added that will be a requirement for USADA to ever bring a case for marijuana. It doesn't matter if the level's 151 nanograms or 1,000 nanograms, there has to be definitive evidence of impairment. And, you know, the reality is I would hope that I've never seen it in my 6 years that I've been here. I'm backstage before fights a lot. I've talked and interacted with fighters who ultimately did test positive. I saw zero evidence that they were impaired, and I think it's because they weren't. Marijuana is a unique substance, which is fat soluble. And depending on how often you use, how your body metabolizes, you know, it's going to be in your system potentially at over 150 nanograms for days, if not weeks. And that's just getting beyond the scope of what we want any anti-doping program to be about. We're only concerned with the effect that it has on the fighter when they're competing.
Yeah. So you mentioned, you know, you got to get USADA to sign off of this. I guess what is the process to make this happen? I mean, obviously, you know, USADA kind of works for you guys. So is it as simple as you saying, stop testing for this? Or do you have, I mean, how does this whole process work?
No, it's not that simple because they work under that WADA umbrella, the World Anti-Doping Agency. And look, their primary business is still U.S. Olympic athletes under that. So I think they want to maintain a standard. But I've been, you know, very pleasantly pleased about what we've seen from USADA over these last few years. Very progressive changes to our policy that are outside of the scope of that WADA world. Introducing the thresholds for certain substances so that if you're under 100 picograms of the M3 metabolite, you know, it's not a violation. That's not the case in the water world. And now this, you know, kind of progressive rule with marijuana. So they do have to have a level of comfort. Ultimately, it is our program, but, you know, they could tell us, look, I'm not comfortable, you know, administering or running a program if you guys, you know, want the rule to be that. So there definitely is, you know, the USADA factor that comes into play, but as long as the science supports it, and it certainly does here, I think they'll be comfortable with it.
So the one, I guess there's a couple caveats. The first one I would say is, you know, unless additional evidence exists that an athlete used it intentionally for performance enhancing purposes. I know that's kind of maybe broad stroke language and you know, legal language, but I mean, are there proven performance-enhancing purposes for marijuana?
Yeah, I don't even know that to be the case. And I think, you know, I think the standard that's going to be used is impairment is inherently going to be performance-enhancing. So if they can show that someone's impaired, they're going to say that inherently means performance-enhancing. I think the argument would be, and I mean, I guess I could see this, is maybe you could take more damage, you know, more pain during a fight if you're high. Clearly, a lot of people use it for anti-anxiety, so it kind of calms your nerves down. That could, you know, nerves are a big part of this sport.
True.
I could see that being an advantage. Now, look, I think they're you know, they're marginal, the advantages and the performance enhancing. And really, my hope is we never, you know, see another sanctionable marijuana case again in our program. I don't think that they're ever, you know, absent a fighter, you know, lighting up a joint backstage, coming into the locker room, stumbling over themselves, you know, reeking of marijuana. I just don't see that they're ever going to be able to, you know, to meet that criteria going forward.
Yeah, it makes sense. Now, the other key I think that everybody has to be aware of is that commissions do still have jurisdiction here, right? So, I mean, you know, we just saw Bevon Lewis, you know, this week get popped by Nevada. So I guess it's important for people to realize that, local commissions do still have, you know, jurisdiction with their own policy. Will you be actively kind of lobbying to work with those commissions to perhaps adopt this?
100%. It's already started. I had a great call today with Andy Foster. He actually leads the ABC medical committee. And he showed interest in putting it before them. He thinks that they can get a recommendation to adapt this by them. But yeah, especially the major commissions, we've already begun that process. We've already shared, the science data, that DOT report, our thinking behind it. So yeah, on one hand, I really want to temper everybody's excitement over this because you're right. You're still dealing with, we're going to be fighting in Nevada for most of our fights this year.
Right.
And Nevada still, maintains that 150 nanogram. So to temper that, but look, we've got to set an example and make a first step. And I think we've done that here. And, I hope that the receptiveness and, positive, feelings about this, maybe put a little bit of pressure on these commissions to change their rules.
Yeah, it'll probably garner a few less headlines, but you added another accredited certification agency. I guess I just wanted to get you to talk about that. I mean, I think some people don't understand. I mean, there's literally a roadmap of what you can take and what you can't take, right? So what's the importance of adding another accredited agency?
There is. So Informed Choice has over 400 certified and tested supplements. So when you put the six of those, companies together, you're talking in excess of 2,000 certified and tested supplements available throughout the world. Asta, one of them, they're Australia, New Zealand, Asia-based. You have the Cologne List, which is European-based. Informed Sport and Informed Choice all over the world. So, yeah, that's definitely the right play as it comes to supplements, to have an approved line of supplements. But being that we're a global sport, we needed to make sure these supplements were available all over the world. So Informed Choice helps add to that. They're kind of on a world platform, and they have additional 400 supplements that they certified. So I'm really happy about that. And indeed, I mean, we've seen the numbers. We still get them, but we've seen the number of contaminated supplement cases go down significantly since we provided that roadmap in the policy to a formally approved line of supplements. So this is just, a positive addition to that.
Yeah, fantastic. Last question I had, Jeff. I mean, what do changes like this mean to you? I mean, I know that you're a stickler for the policy and the rules and enforcement and doing things all the right way. I mean, law is your thing, right? So, I mean, what does it mean to you when you see things like this change? I mean, is that a positive? What do you take out of it, right? That you can adjust this kind of overarching policy that we have.
Yeah, I mean, I'm super proud about all the revisions that we've made, because I think if you look at each time that we've revised the policy, they've been done on rules which are, I don't know what the word you want to use, a credit to the athlete. They're more athlete fairness versus making the program more rigid and more strong. And, I've said, and I will continue to say, that fairness and due process in an anti-doping program are just as important as strength, comprehensiveness of the program. If an athlete even has a perception that a rule is wrong or unfair, they lose confidence in the entire program. And, in my experience, they potentially start ways to find, ways to get around it. So, I mean, based upon my, informal discussion, I mean, there's a significant, number, percentage of athletes that choose to use marijuana. Many for legitimate reasons outside of recreational. Many use it for pain control, anti-anxiety, to sleep, in lieu of, more dangerous, more addictive drugs. So, hopefully this being the first step to opening that up, so that an athlete on, Wednesday night of fight week, instead of going to a Vicodin because their knee hurts and they can't sleep, can use a little bit of cannabis and get to sleep and have that pain control. And I mean, it has no effect whatsoever on a competition on Saturday night. So it's the right move. And yeah, I'm really excited about this revision and that specific policy change.
All right, so there's the man, Jeff Novitzky, talking about the changes. Listen, like I said, maybe some people don't care, but I think this is a great thing for fighters moving forward. I mean, listen, we know they use it for pain management. We know they use it for anxiety. I just don't see why it shouldn't be okay. Again, you shouldn't smoke weed in the locker room and go to the fight, just like you shouldn't be drunk the night of a fight. That's impairment.
But I'm often drunk the night of a fight.
Well, that's a totally different situation, sir. That's a totally different situation. All right, hopefully people did find that a little bit interesting, at least. Okay, listen, the rest of this main card is fantastic. I think the one that means the most, right, no question about it, is Santiago Ponzinibbio versus Li Jingling. And I don't not that it doesn't mean something for Li, it does. I mean, it's unfortunate he's coming off a loss after he had a fantastic run going. But Santiago Ponzinibbio, what the guy has dealt with over the last 2 years to get back to where he is. I think people have completely forgotten about how good this guy is. And, I mean, this is I don't know, can you have a coming out party if you've already – well, I don't want to say if you've already come out that time. You know what I mean? Can you have, if you were already – I mean, this guy lost everything and he's trying to reestablish himself. I think this is a big moment for him. And to me, a fight that maybe people aren't given the love that needs to. Because, listen, Joaquin Buckley – the viral superstar. Okay, that's amazing. They gave him a fight that I think they feel pretty comfortable. That should have been the James Krause fight. I'm sorry, it should have been the James Krause fight. Puna Soriano versus Dusko Todorovic is a great fight. Two undefeated guys. It's no question what the UFC was trying to do here, right? They're trying to make an action-packed card. It's going to be. But I will say that fight between the Leech and between he's not Gente Boy anymore, right? He's the Argentine Dagger, I think I heard Anik talking about, or something like that. But anyway, Santiago Ponzinibbio, big one. What am I missing? I mean, that's the one that means something, right? The others, everything. I think everything on this main card in the ABC is designed to just be like, let's have some fun. Casual fans tuning in, they're gonna love MMA. But that one, to me, if you weren't thinking about it, think about it. It's got some real meaning in terms of what the fight means itself.
Yeah, man. I mean, like we were talking earlier about it's all the lead up to McGregor card and stuff like that, but this card, I think, has merit on its own. I really do. If you look down this card, there's a few names and certainly some fights that really stand out to me. Wednesday, maybe there's a case. But, I mean, Saturday, like, obviously Buckley, you know, he's back to his stomping grounds, as it were. I think that guy's maybe got a ceiling, but in terms of entertainment, I think he's always down for one. I actually really like the Dusko.
Yep.
But I also like Puna, actually. Who's fighting? I like both of them. We saw Puna on the Contender Series, obviously. Yep. I like both of that. That could be exciting. I think, dude, I don't know why. It's funny as well because UFC career has not been like fucking amazing. But basically, I watched John interview Justin Tafa down in Melbourne. And I was like, that guy's such a cool fucking...
He's a character, right?
He's so cool. He's, you know, the typical Samoan sort of like just hard but cool guy. And Carlos Felipe, obviously, I just think that has potential to just be, I mean, either a shit show or like a really fun heavyweight fight.
Yep.
So that's the one I'm looking forward to outside of the co-main and main. And I think that's the one I'm looking forward to the most, actually.
I agree. I think it's going to be. I think they built this card for a purpose. It's appealing to the casual fan. Yeah. And look, it's a 6 hour long commercial for the UFC 257 pay per view.
Yeah. And listen, like, I'll take a moment, you know, because what the listeners don't realize is John just had to do a radio spot and I just sat here and progressively got completely and utterly drunk. So, but
I did do another interview while that interview was playing.
Yeah. So I've now, we're gone now. But I have to say that the matchmakers have done a great job. Like in terms of finding, you know, the names might not be so hot, but like, so Ponzinibbio versus Li, I can't even pronounce his first name.
You can say it like Santiago Ponzinibbio.
I keep calling him Jingling.
That's Santiago. God bless him. It's his second language. I think it might be his third language, but English.
Technically, Chinese is my second language.
He just calls him Jingling, which I thought was pretty funny.
That's a song.
I'm like, I don't think that's it. It's got a little rhythm to it, but I don't think that's it. But that's the meaningful fight. It's going to be a fun fight. It's going to be a fun fight card.
I think it's going to be. Yeah, no. Without sounding like a spoiled bitch, there are cards where you look at it and you're like, there's no name value. Oh, fuck. You know, the site's not going to do great traffic. It's kind of, damn it, you know. But on this card, I see so many little matchups. I'm like, well, that's going to be fun to watch. And I think I can convert myself back into a fan for a few hours, you know.
And that's to say nothing of Phil Hawes being on there, who's a guy that we followed forever on being, you know, kind of potential next level guy. But, you know, Nasruddin Imavov, who we fought.
It's fans, dude. Fans.
Fans.
Dirty people coughing and spluttering.
I'll be in the back.
Are you going to stay at the back, do you think?
You know what? Most of it. I mean, that's what I got. I mean, listen.
We have to work
back there anyway. But I will try to sneak out a little bit and get a little bit. Stay a safe distance away from those fans.
I think I'll watch the... Oh, fuck, dude. I wouldn't mind watching Ponzinibbio work, though. Or Buckley. Oh, my God. This is a good card.
Hey, look. It looked like the press room and the press row were pretty close. So we can maybe move back and forth a little bit.
Yeah, but you know these scrubs, John. They're trying to take spaces where they're not wanted.
All right, well, listen. I got to let Hot T go because he's gone. Before he says something that he regrets,
yeah,
we should probably wrap things up. We'll be back with plenty more of Fight Island. It's all a big commercial for UFC 257. All leads to Conor McGregor. That's why we had Hot T, Oscar Wills from the Mag Live. We know what it's all about. In the meantime, until that happens, we'll be back in a half over on patreon.com/the MMA Roadshow. Blah, 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 blah. Thanks for listening.